Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, practicing veterinarian, coming to you from none other than the Florida Space Coast. Thank you for tuning in today. We have a well overdue program today. I don't know why I've not discussed this sooner, but a very dear new client of mine, I say new client, I just recently opened up a new facility in VR, Florida called Premier Veterinary Care. This lady came into my life with her three dogs, and I feel like I've known her much longer than just a couple of months. And she clearly is a naturally minded pet owner, and that's an increasing trend we're seeing in the industry. I think it's a good trend. And so she brought in an article for me to look over and comment on, and it's about natural heartworm prevention without pills is the title of it. It comes from a website called Dog Naturally Magazine. It is owned and authored by Dana Scott, who's got a lot of opinions about natural approach to veterinary medicine that kind of flies in the face with a lot of stuff that we're recommending, not recommending. And this article, it's not the first time it's been brought to my attention. I think it's time I address it on the air. Any of you out there that are listening that are naturally minded, I think just about anybody who's looking for a natural approach to maintain the health of their dogs with minimal side effect, kind of toe that line to the best of their ability, they're going to come across this website at least. And certainly, I think they'll probably come across this article. It's like the sixth time I've heard about it. So let's jump into this in just a moment. First, though, we have an awesome email from Paul LeCue about my latest episode previous to this one. Paula is a repeat offender, a groomer, and one of my best contributors from the email perspective. So, Paula, thank you for contributing again. Let's jump right into your email, and then we'll get into our topic, folks. Hi, Dr. Roger. I keep telling myself not to bombard you with emails after every episode, but you keep touching on subjects that are near and dear to my heart, so I blame you. Smiley face emoji. I listened yesterday to the episode on working dog breeds, and I was gesturing so wildly in agreement, I think I worried the golden I was working on. I'm going to try to keep this as short as possible. When you said that it is a problem for veterinarians when people have these dogs, they don't know how to properly train or control, I was yelling at my phone. Groomers, too. I have stories, but I'm sure they mirror your own. In fact, after listening, I groomed a husky German Shepherd cross who is in the complete wrong house with little to no leadership or exercise. That was fun. I can only imagine. I've offered to take her for exercise at no charge, but they declined. Also, every time I walk my corgi, at least one person tells me how cute she is and how they've always wanted one. One person loved how they are, quote-unquote, apartment-sized. Yikes, I live in an upstairs condo with no yard. So to that person, I said, ask me how many times a day I walk, or how much money I spent on herding lessons, or how many hours I work on leadership and obedience. I try to educate, but all people see is the cute factor. Queen's Best Stumpy Dog Rescue posted a few months back that out of their 25 available openings for rescue, 19 were corgis with bite and aggression histories. This is because proper research wasn't done, and now the dog is paying the price. Thank you for talking about this. I will be sharing on my social media. Have a lovely day, Paula and the corgi. Paula, you have a lovely day as well, and thank you for this wonderful comment. The article is about working dog breeds, and I would encourage you, especially if you are in the market for wanting to adopt one, please listen to this episode. It is archived, the one just before this one. Thanks again, Paula, and to everybody else out there who may not have listened before. If you would like to send email comments or questions to me to be addressed on the air or to be selected to be addressed on the air, please send them to comments@web-dvm.net. That email address is posted on the show page wherever you're listening from. So let's jump into our topic. So natural heartworm prevention without pills by Dana Scott. So I'd like to preface the fact that in addition to posting these views, Dog Naturally magazine has a rather substantial line of natural products that they sell. So, you know, take this all with a grain of salt, but I don't want to dismiss all of this without really explaining to everyone. And I also, there's a few things in here that are actually true that I agree with. And so let's just jump right in and really get to the crux of this. So her first sentence of the article is, some vets tell dog owners that heartworm medicine is too dangerous to use. Well, it's a very general statement. I'm sure that may be true. There's millions of veterinarians in the world. The one veterinarian she mentions in this first paragraph, though, that feels this way is Dr. Glenn Dupree. And so, you know, there's no veterinarian that I know that feels this way, that heartworm preventative medications are too dangerous. But throwing out this name is not the best name for me. Dr. Glenn Dupree has some really out there, the late Dr. Glenn Dupree has some pretty out there opinions on the far left of veterinary medicine. When I say the far left, I'm referring to, you know, the extreme quote-unquote homeopathy. He has very, very controversial opinions, and he even lost a lot of the more holistic traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, acupuncture-based herbal therapy type veterinarians that are out there, even lost a lot of them. So not the best example to throw out there, in my opinion. But she starts with the notion that a dog's immune system, if it's strong, has the opportunity to clear heartworm upon infection. So infection occurs through the bite of a mosquito, and we'll get into the life cycle of the heartworm. But essentially, the infective larvae, it's called a microfilaria, and it's so tiny that it lives in the gut of a mosquito. It's microscopic. And yes, there is some truth to that. The dog's immune system most certainly can clear it. And you want that to occur certainly before it reaches a stage of larval development where not only the dog's immune system can't touch it, but secondly, our preventatives also can't touch it. So is it something you can hang your hat on? Most certainly not. I have seen many a dog that are otherwise perfectly healthy come in heartworm positive. Dogs that are sheltered, that are given heartworm preventative even, that are fed good nutrition, that are kept in a good body condition, that the owner simply, you know, lapsed on her heartworm preventative by 1 or 2 months and just bad luck happened, because I'm in Florida, which is the heartworm capital of the United States. So yeah, it's just, it's a dog's immune system can clear the microfilaria, but, or that initial microfilaria, but is it something we can count on? No. I think that's been proven time and again, at least in my practices. So the next thing she talks about is heartworm medications being very risky. So let's just briefly touch on the products that she lists. HeartGuard, Interceptor, Sentinel, Revolution, ProHeart 6, ProHeart 12. She talks about them being high risk. So when she talks about the side effects specifically, she breaks out, of course, the worst and the least common. In fact, none that I've seen in 20 years of using these products. Ataxia, tremors, convulsions, seizures. She cherry-picked the worst ones out there and the least common. So all of these medications that I mentioned, I'm not going to go product by product, because they're all kind of sort of similar in their own way. They're all derived from a genre of pharmaceutical called macrocyclic lactone. And what they all have in common is they tinker with the nerve ganglion of invertebrate animals. So invertebrate animals are animals that do not have skeletons, so that thereby they're called invertebrates. That would include our worm parasites, certainly. It also includes ectoparasites such as fleas and ticks. They have exoskeletons. And rather than having a brain, like mammals who are very much vertebrates, they have a nerve ganglion. And so the main thrust of macrocyclic lactones and other parasiticides out there is to sort of short circuit the nerve ganglion. Doing so, though, while not being harmful at all to the vertebrate neurological system. our neurosystems are built very differently from that of invertebrates. And so what occurs in the invertebrate animal does not happen to us. I want to be very clear about that. She's calling them neurotoxins, but yes, they're neurotoxins to invertebrate animals specifically. And so, you know, I'm going to really quickly cherry pick the worst side effects of ibuprofen real quick. And some of them might really scare you. I take ibuprofen periodically. I compete in triathlons. I've been an athlete all my life, played college lacrosse. And so in the process of my training, I get a little ache and pain here or there. I want to power through it. I'll pop an ibuprofen. People take them for headaches, fever. I'm sure most of you out there have taken Motrin or Advil at some point in your life. Well, here's what could happen. Bleeding gums, blistering, peeling, loosening of the skin, blood in the urine or stools, black, bloody, tarry stools, blurred vision, impaired vision, severe chest pain, confusion, coma, cough or hoarseness, difficulty breathing, difficulty swallowing, dilated neck veins, dizziness, extreme fatigue, fast, irregular pounding or racing heartbeat or pulse, fever without chills, general body swelling, hair loss, thinning of hair, severe headache, hives or welts. And here's my, I could keep reading these, but here's my all-time favorite. Acute sudden death, right? So that's all reported side effects of ibuprofen. Guess what? I'm going to go cycling at some point today, and I have a little bit of lateral knee discomfort. I'm still going to take an ibuprofen to help power through that. I'm not going to worry about all these things because these are the worst things that can happen that are very rare. So I'm going to circle back here and go back to macrocyclic lactones in general, and I'm going to sort of just look at all of these products and talk about the most common, with the exception of ProHeart 6 and ProHeart 12, okay? So right now I'm talking about HeartGuard, Interceptor, Sentinel, Revolution. I think we could throw Trifexis in there as well as Simparica Trio. The most common side effects are vomiting, diarrhea, anorexia. Anorexia means off the appetite. Those are the most common, and even those I see very rarely. The one place I am in agreement with her on the risk is ProHeart 6 and ProHeart 12. She brings up that ProHeart 6 came out as the injectable six-month heartworm preventative, and in 2004 it was pulled off the market because of reaction and deaths. That is true. Later on, it was the rights of that medication were bought by another pharmaceutical, and the formula was tinkered with and made safer and relaunched and came out as ProHeart 6. I'm not sure the exact year of that, but the safety of it was touted, and within a few years, my own practice, my previous one, we were a multi-doctor practice. The doctors came to me and were wondering if it's time to start carrying it because, you know, it seems like overall the safety is good up there with everything else. And so I decided to carry it, and within about 6 months, I saw the first reaction. It wasn't deadly, but it certainly, the dog got sick. It was a cause and effect. It was like, dog was fine, healthy adult dog, next day, not doing well. And we had another reaction a month later. Again, didn't die, but I'm like, this is not going there. And so I, as a practitioner, completely stopped using it. This was as of about 3-4 years ago. I just got completely gun-shy to it. And in my new practice, Premier Veterinary Care, I don't even carry it. So no one has the opportunity to even use it. And now there's a ProHeart 12, which lasts for 12 months. And so, nope, not going there. That's, you know, two reactions, 1 month apart, just 6 months into using it. Not liking it. So hopefully the manufacturers don't try to sue me over that, but I gotta speak the truth. As far as moving along here, she gets into the life cycle of the heartworm, which she's accurate about. Basically, what happens is a mosquito feeds off of a heartworm-positive dog, flies around, does its business for 10 days, then lands on another unsuspecting dog who does not have heartworm. While the mosquito is feeding on that dog, injects microfilaria, the infective unit of the heartworm, and then the microfilaria then moves into the next phases of development, and within 6 to 7 months, you have an adult worm. And so that is all correct. Can't argue with any of that. The 10 days, by the way, there's a step that goes into the a conversion step that goes from actually microfilaria to L4. That's why I paused for a second, because I got that wrong. Sorry. The microfilaria within the gut of the mosquito goes to an L4 larvae. That's what gets injected into the dog. So the infective unit is the microfilaria, because that's what the mosquito picks up, but it has to progress while within the gut of the mosquito into L4 larva to then get injected into the dog, and that's what actually infects the dog. And so what the microfilaria is in the end, it's a reproductive unit. It's what the female worm is pushing out there to reproduce, and ultimately that's what the mosquito picks up. It's not what's getting injected into your dog. So my apologies on that misstatement there. So the first thing she talks about as far as naturally battling heartworm disease without preventative care is to maximize the immune system. I think we already discussed that you can't hang your hat on that. But here's how she talks about boosting the immune system. Again, things I think we could all agree on. Plenty of exercise. Offer fresh spring or filtered water. Don't use chemicals in your home or yard. Use natural remedies instead of pharmaceutical drugs. I would agree with that when possible. Sure. Minimize vaccines. Kind of a vague statement. Not sure how extreme she's going in that direction. I would rephrase that from my veterinarian's hat as select only the necessary vaccines based on your pet's geography and lifestyle. Vaccines in and of themselves do not weaken the immune system, but they do cause antigenic stimulation of the immune system. And so by virtue of that, we just want to give them just what they need, nothing more, nothing less, based on where they live. And then here's where she kind of loses me. Use natural flea and tick prevention. Sorry, they don't exist, but I'm going to kind of touch on that a little bit. They sort of do, but not in the way Dana Scott's thinking, and I'll touch on that after we're done with the heartworm side of it. Of this, I am going to throw that in there because I think it's important to talk about. And then the last one that I don't agree with is feed a natural, raw meat-based, whole food diet, not kibble. So raw meat feeding was something that was becoming sort of in vogue shortly after I graduated vet school. So I'm talking around like 2003. And so there's nothing new about this approach to feeding dogs, right or wrong, whether you agree with it or not. It's been going on for 20 years. And so it's been studied, it's been looked at, and there's actually no evidence in any study conducted that dogs that are fed raw meat-based diets are any healthier, live any longer, have better immune systems, or even have less allergy. A lot of folks that are going in the direction of raw feeding are doing so out of desperation because of the degree of skin allergies present in dogs. It's becoming like, it was bad when I graduated back in 2002. It's getting worse. It's getting progressively worse. And so, yeah, out of desperation, a lot of people have gone in that direction. It doesn't really even seem to help with that, with a few caveats here or there that, you know, that's just not a means to boost the immune system, certainly not a means to try to prevent heartworm disease. The next thing she says is avoid mosquito bites. And this is how she recommends avoiding mosquito bites. Avoid standing water in your yard or on your walks. Keep your dog indoors at dawn and dusk or when mosquitoes are most active. Avoid swampy mosquito breeding areas on walks. Use natural mosquito repellents to keep bugs away. Feed fresh garlic to help repel mosquitoes. So avoid fresh standing water. Impossible in Florida anyway. Everywhere you turn, I'm in my little studio in the back of my house looking at my lake, a very big lake with a conservation area. I can't avoid it. If I go across the street to walk my dog through the path, it goes over a creek And then along the side of yet another lake. We have lakes everywhere because we were formerly swampland. And in order to make this place habitable, there's got to be drainage area. It's very beautiful, but it's also very necessary and it's unavoidable. Fresh standing water is everywhere. Keep your dog indoors at dawn, dusk. And when mosquitoes are most active, they're most active at night. So for me, again, very challenging. I like to walk my dogs before I go to bed. It's one of our rituals. It's part of what makes me tick, they tick. And so I want to walk them. I want to take them for a good half-hour walk at night. And I don't have to want to worry about the fact that they're going to inevitably get bitten by mosquitoes when we're out there. Avoiding swampy mosquito breeding areas on walks, that's a no-brainer. Don't walk through marshes. That's probably good policy for many reasons. not bad idea. Use natural mosquito repellents. I've smelled some of these things. People spraying their dog down in cedar and pine and other things. They're not going to work to repel mosquitoes. They really don't care. And feed fresh garlic. That absolutely doesn't work. But in addition to that, the garlic can cause inclusion body anemia. This is an anemia that happens because of there are elements within the garlic that are actually interrupt the synthesis of red blood cells and can cause anemia. So please don't feed garlic. Don't do it. Bad advice. Not only is she telling you something doesn't work there, that is potentially harmful. I have diagnosed in my career 6 cases of including inclusion body anemia over people feeding garlic in a means of preventing fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes, and it doesn't even work. So please don't go there. And then lastly, she says, use herbal heartworm protection. And I know for a fact that these don't work because there was a local practitioner who used various concoctions of this stuff. So I'm going to just mention them by name. Hawthorn, dandelion, garlic. Don't need to discuss that one again. Neem, wormwood, black walnut, and black seed. None of these truly work to prevent heartworm disease. The doctor that utilized these methods here, one of the reasons I knew about him is because I frequently got a lot of his cases that the patients didn't get any better. The not just on the heartworm side of things, he'd be diagnosing, looking at the color of the tongue or checking the retinas and the pupils and doing these exams without running any diagnostics. And so as the patients are getting sicker, they'd say, well, let's see what the Western guy has to say over here. And I'd figure out, no, your cat doesn't have yin and yang kidney disease. Your cat's in chronic renal failure. And by the way, here's the numbers. And I really wish I would have caught this, 6 months ago. So stuff like that. Well, I also got his heartworm positive cases, about 3 a year. And I'm one of many veterinarians that sort of were in that general area. And probably there's a lot more out there that I even, that maybe went elsewhere to have them dealt with. So they don't work. And so I don't see any of these, with the exception of garlic, being particularly harmful, but they're not going to work to prevent heartworm. And so moving on here, she then talks about, okay, we're not going to use heartworm prevention. We're going to use these other things. And she says, we need to test more often because of the fact that the antigen we're trying to pick up is excreted only by the female. And at that, she's going to only be excreting the antigen after 7 months after infection. So A, female, B, 7 months after infection, 6-7 months is. And that's all true. We do get false negatives. What she's saying is, well, if we're testing more often, then what we're aiming to do is limit the false negatives, so then we can indeed step in and give heartworm preventative and kill these things before they get beyond the stage of larval development that the preventatives no longer work. Now, number one, she's not clarifying how often she's recommending testing. Number two, she's also not really discussing what she means by stepping in with preventative, before you need like the arsenic-based full-out aggressive treatment. Because beyond a stage of larval development, the preventatives don't work. So is she saying, hey, use a preventative that are traditional just that one time, or hey, go to the herbals and use that? I don't know. She doesn't quite clarify there. But she says that she also recommends yearly microfilarial testing in addition to testing for the antigen more often, non-specifically, of course. Microfilaria testing is what was done back when I was like a kennel boy. We're talking like mid-90s when I was still in college and I was working my way up the ranks in a veterinary clinic trying to get experience. Microfilaria testing is pretty old school. It's not nearly as accurate as antigen testing. The American Heartworm Society actually recommends just only doing this after a positive test, and you want to confirm, do a microfilaria test, because if there's microfilaria swimming around in there, then you know it's not a false positive. So it's more an adjunctive test, and doing it as part of our regular regimen of testing. And then she talks about DNA testing using PCR, which is going to give you results in real time. It's going to minimize false negatives and get you those positives more commonly if they are indeed positive. Well, let's put all this together. You're talking about spending a lot more money. Again, she doesn't specify how often she feels they should be tested for the antigen that we do routinely on a yearly basis. And the DNA test is like $400. And so how often should we be doing that testing? As she said, it takes 6 to 7 months to get to the adult heartworm stage. So what are we talking about? 3 times a year? 4 times a year? Even the antigen testing 4 times a year, 3 times a year could get pretty expensive. And you're spending an awful lot of time at the vet. So I don't know, throwing this stuff out there, she's not really giving much guidance, and I just don't think that it is something that is really necessary when you look at the overall safety of these medications. So let's really just go back to, very quickly, the safety of these things that she's talking about them being so dangerous. You're talking about a really tiny larvae. This larva is so small, it swims around in the gut of the mosquito and swims around in the bloodstream of dogs, and we can see it under a microscope. It doesn't take much of these macrocyclic lactones to kill that. So what we're looking at is not full-out dosing of, say, ivermectin, for example, that we would use for treating river blindness in people, but we're looking at using a marginal dose, a very small dose, like tiny doses. In micrograms, you know, this, and so when you look at all this other stuff that she's asking you to do, a lot of it of which doesn't work, and all this additional testing, you really need to go there? You know, I'm going to say overwhelmingly no. If you would feel better, perhaps go with the oldies but goodies. The ones that have been around so long that, boy, if there was going to be a problem, we would have known this many, many, many moons ago. So there's HeartGuard. That's your traditional ivermectin. Ivermectin was the original macrocyclic lactone that came out to treat parasitic diseases in humans that we later learned are good at not just treating certain parasitic diseases in animals, but also good at preventing heartworm. And then there's Interceptor, milbemycinoxime. That's been around a very long time as well. The newer generation ones are quite safe. Again, I will tell you, I'm not a fan of ProHeart 6 and ProHeart 12. That's one place where she and I could be in a great deal of agreement. But then, you know, there's one statement that she makes in here that I really want to say borders on the absurd, and I'm going to actually say that for the first time in this article. She's actually opining that because there is an increasing resistance to heartworm preventative medications among heartworm populations, where the heartworm preventatives are not working as well, that by giving this toxic stuff, you're actually increasing the likelihood of your dog getting heartworm disease because you're weakening their bodies and they don't work anyway. And that just that's out in left field for me. That's a statement that, you know, it really makes me question this person's, I don't want to say intellect, but scholarly, scholarly attributes, I guess, because there is some resistance to ivermectin specifically because it's been around the longest. Specifically, we've only seen that in the southeastern United States, primarily in the Mississippi River Basin, where mosquitoes are just horrific. And the biggest contributing factor to that, honestly, is rescue groups in the area using ivermectin for the slow kill approach. I'm going to touch on this just very briefly. The fast kill approach is how we recommend treating heartworm. It's out of the dog's system within 2 months. The fast kill treatment with the slow kill treatment, the rescue groups, not the rescue groups, but many rescue groups, in order to save costs, they will treat with the slow kill, which is if you give ivermectin every month and prevent the existing adult worms from reproducing, because every month you give the ivermectin, you are killing the microfilaria, so they can't reproduce without the microfilaria. Eventually, if you wait it out long enough and you don't miss a single dose, within 3 to 5 years, the adult worms present in the body will die because that's their lifespan. This is all true, but it's a very bad idea because A, it's creating resistance. B, there's a lot of bad things that can happen in those 3 to 5 years, and the heart can get weakened, and it's just bad for many reasons. But back to Dana Scott's statement there that heartworm preventatives, because of emerging resistance, is in fact contributing and making your dog more at risk to heartworm disease, I'm going to wholeheartedly disagree with that. So I think I beat this article to death. Real quick before we go, I'm going to talk about the new generation flea ticks. And it's important because they came out, people loved them, the safety data was fantastic, and then the FDA came around and 2 years ago required additional labeling stating that there is a risk of seizure. They did this as a response to anecdotal reports, their own retrospective analysis, and it caused a lot of uproar, and certainly it increased the conversation I have to have about these medications. So let me just talk about them briefly. So there's Bravecto, NexGard, and Simparica Trio. Now, Simparica Trio is an all-in-one. It's got your traditional milbamycin oxime, which is what's in an interceptor. But in addition to that, it also has Sirolaner, which is one of these new generation oral flea ticks. There's NexGard. NexGard is a Foxolaner. That is an oral flea tick. And then there's Bravecto, which is Floralaner. So they all have that laner at the end of them, L-A-N-E-R. So essentially what they all have in common is that there are particular soils that were discovered with plant life in them that had no insects. And so this was studied, the plants were studied, the soil was studied, and what was learned was that there's bacterial populations in these soils that lived among these plants that excreted these molecules. And so they were isolated. They were tested, and they were found, like the macrocyclic lactones, to have a pretty devastating effect on the nerve ganglions of invertebrates, but largely and overwhelmingly did not have any negative effect whatsoever on the neurological systems of the host invertebrates. And so what occurred was the first of these to come out was called Bravecto. And, you know, you have a lot of the topicals that were really losing their efficacy, and, you know, flea ticks infestations, particularly ticks can transmit disease. So with regard to the ticks, we've heard of Lyme disease, that's very well known, but there's also several others, bacterial diseases that live within the gut of the tick, and when they are transmitted after feeding on the host, can release disease. So Lyme disease is the big problem in the Northeast, and it's actually made its way all the way down to Georgia. I believe it's pretty well endemic now in the Midwest and has not made its way to my area of Florida, thank goodness. But there's other tick-borne diseases out there, not quite as common as Lyme, but anaplasmosis, Rocky Mountain spotted fever are a couple, or Ehrlichiosis is another one. So there's tick-borne diseases out there. So it's not just a matter of nuisance, it's a matter of disease prevention. Fleas mostly are a nuisance, but we have the front lines in the past, and we had the advantage, and those had their day, but over time, some of these things just lose their efficacy. They were also very safe, also tinkered with the nerve ganglion of the invertebrates without hurting the neurological systems of the vertebrates, but unfortunately, we love their safety, but they just were becoming virtually, especially here in Florida, where we don't get, a seasonal kill off of these things, almost ineffective, 100% ineffective. So along came these new modalities, and I think that the conversation I have to have so often as a result of the revisiting of this FDA labeling, it's an unfortunate consequence, because the reality is that the labeling is not done responsibly, in my opinion. Really, the overwhelming consensus is that these medications don't cause seizure. They can lower the threshold of seizure in certain patients that have an existing seizure disorder, such as epilepsy. And so, that's a big distinction from actually causing seizure. So, great example is I have a dog. He's my rescue. And he's laying next to me one night, and I saw his little ears trembling. He's got these great little, gremlin ears that kind of stick up and partially hang. And I see them trembling, and I noticed that he was lucid and he was fine, and he was having what's called a petit mal seizure. And so I had been giving him Bravecto, and so I decided, he might have an underlying seizure issue, so I'm going to stop using this, just because I now know what I know. And instead, I switched him to a Seresto collar, which they work pretty well. And so I would say several months went by, and he didn't have any future issues, and so that was great. Well, just recently a storm came. We've had some wild storms here in Florida the last week or so, and I looked down, and his little ears were doing the same thing. The lightning's crashing around us, and he didn't like it. It startled him, and I see the little tremors. And so anyway, I worked him up, and I discovered that Alvin has a condition called canine epileptoid cramping syndrome, that it's not quite epilepsy, but it's an epileptic-like issue with the neurological system. So that's something they inherit. It's largely genetic, and he already had it. It just had never manifested until I believe the Bravecto might have brought it out of him, but he hasn't been on Bravecto in a long time. And yet he still had the little petit mal issue. So now I'm treating, now that I know exactly what's going on, it's not the Bravecto that caused it. The Bravecto enabled its clinical presentation. So I think the FDA kind of made a mistake in their labeling and saying that there's medication tied to seizure, because now you have the Dana Scotts of the world who are going to run with that and say, look, the FDA even said, when the FDA just, did it in a manner that I would say the majority of veterinarians don't agree with. That stated, if you do have a dog with a seizure disorder, I would not use any of these medications. Specifically, it's Simparica Trio, Bravecto, and NexGard. I would just not use them. Unlike heartworm disease, you're not looking at necessarily the grave consequences of getting an infestation. As you can see with heartworm disease, that's a much more serious topic in my opinion. But still, as I discussed, there is the tick-borne issue where if you live where I started my practice, or the practice of veterinary medicine when I first graduated, I practiced on the North Shore of Long Island, New York. I saw 5 to 7 cases of Lyme disease a month. And man, those dogs presented really, really sick. And a small percentage of them ended up, having chronic recurring issues where we we had to deal with some consequences of Lyme disease. So, you know, if you're in a Lyme prone area, I'd be very careful to discount the use of these products unless there is an existing neurological disorder that's proven. So a lot to talk about today. I definitely went over my typical 20 minutes that I like to do, but a lot to unpackage, a lot to discuss. I want to thank my client for having brought up this discussion. I'm always happy to have these conversations. Without these conversations, we don't learn. There's one of the things that I brought up to her in the exam room was, if not for these conversations, we wouldn't really fully understand and know about the efficacy of omega-3 fatty acids and how important they are to the overall health of our bodies and what they're capable of. We wouldn't know about ApoCaps. ApoCaps are a mushroom derivative that are powerfully anti-cancer. You know, there's a lot of things that we've learned by paying attention, looking at these things, and taking the time to study them. And so this is yet another one of those discussions, but at the same time, I don't want to go in the directions that could be potentially harmful to your pet and make wrong recommendations. So thank you to everybody that tuned in. I'm really looking forward to hearing some of the email comments after this episode to really see what others think and what others have been told and how either any one of you individually may feel about Dana Scott and her Dog Naturally magazine and others that are out there like that. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your day.